This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, welcome to the podcast. This is Molly.
And I'm Kristen.
And Kristen, I was thinking of an anecdote today. One time at Christmas, my family was sitting around playing this card game where you draw a card. It's got like a deep question and it helps you learn things about other people.
Nice.
It was very meaningful, except my family's a little sarcastic. So when the question, what do you like least about your gender came up, my brother responded that the thing he liked least about being male was that he always had to walk to the back of department stores to get to the men's department. That was his biggest complaint.
Wow.
Yeah.
Life must be good for the Edmonds brothers.
But I have to say, when he said it, there were these like nods of recognition from all the guys in the room, like, yeah, it is kind of a bummer to have to walk to the back of the department store.
Uh-huh.
But I was thinking, at least when he gets there, shopping is easy.
Oh, yeah. They know, they just have to know their whatever inch size, waist size, leg length.
It seems like two numbers, like 32 by 36, you know? I don't know what those mean, but it seems very standardized.
Yeah, whereas if we were to walk into a department store right now, pick out five different brands of jeans, same size, guarantee you right now, maybe one of those would fit well.
Yeah, oh, maybe.
Maybe.
It takes a long time for girls to shop.
Yeah, men and women can both relate to this. Women who obviously are buying clothes for themselves and men who have valiantly made the attempt to buy clothes for women. It is hard. It is a strange and confusing world of numbers and sizes that just really don't add up.
They don't add up. You might be, you know, a size 6 in one store, size 8 from another store, maybe even in the same store. You have to buy like 3 different sizes.
Yeah, I don't know what size I am anymore. I just try to get into a zen state before I walk into a store and just let it take me.
Just go in there with as many clothes as you can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting enough, Krista and I, when we were researching women's clothing sizes, both took a survey that kind of questioned like what kind of fits we liked, what kind of styles we liked. And Kristen, you got like 65 possible jean styles that would fit you.
Yeah, 65 jeans. It was fine. Like, it's like, oh yeah, answer all these questions. We'll find the perfect pair or 65 pairs of jeans.
Yeah, I got 72 jean results. There's no way I'm trying on 72 jeans.
No, not going to happen. So let's get to the bottom of this. Why are women's clothing sizes so hard to decipher?
Why are they? Why are they so hard to figure out? Why can't it be like the good old days, by which I mean the pre-Civil War days?
Yes, I don't know if I'd call them the good old days, but yes, the Civil War does have a lot to do with the standardization of clothing sizes. Before then, a lot of clothes were either made in the home, or if you were wealthy enough, you could have a tailor make clothes for you. But with the Civil War, soldiers needed uniforms, obviously, and home production couldn't exactly keep up with demand. And so then you start having the mass production of uniforms, which then led to standardization of men's sizes, because they're like, well, this would be a lot easier if we could just kind of, you know, stamp out different sizes of men's uniforms and send them off.
Yeah, they took all that data. After the Civil War, men could buy ready-made clothes. Mm-hmm. Women didn't follow until about the 1920s, and that's when, you know, industrialization was picking up, and, you know, companies started trying to appeal to women, being like, buy this dress, it's already made for you.
Yeah, you've got the growing urban middle class that's able to afford more of these clothes. Just, you know, advertising is starting to take off. All of these forces combining to kick off the whole retail industry.
But they were making all these ready-made clothes with absolutely no data about women's bodies. So you would send off for your dress, they'd mail it back. It would look like, you know, a burlap sack mm-hmm. on you, not necessarily in texture.
Which is kind of how a lot of clothes that I put on now that I think are my size look on me. But
burn.
I digress. Burn clothes. So between 1949 and 1952, the Mail Order Association of America, in conjunction with the National Bureau of Standards, organized this massive survey of women's measurements. Mm-hmm. And they collected all of this data. I think it was 16,000 women that participated in this study, to figure out what exactly women's clothing sizes were.
Yeah, and they also took some data during World War II from the Women's Army Corps. They used the volunteers from that organization to also, you know, feed into the data. But regardless where the data came from, it was mostly from young Caucasian women.
Mm-hmm.
Not very ethnically diverse results, not taking into account how your body changes as you age. It was sort of these very small subsets of women who determined the original standard sizes.
Right, but nevertheless, they took 59 measurements from each volunteer, and the studies were published by the USDA under the title Women's Measurements for Garments and Pattern Construction.
And those are still used today if you're a sewer. Patterns that you buy in the store still use those original sizes, which go from 8 to 38.
But one thing that you'll notice, I can speak personally to this. My mom was a seamstress, still is a seamstress, and she would make dresses for me. And I remember a couple years ago, I wanted a dress, and we decided that we would work on one together. And so we went to the store, and picking out the pattern, finding the right size pattern was slightly traumatic, because since it's based on these old body measurements, I had to go up a few sizes than I normally would.
You're wearing a 38?
Yeah, I honestly wasn't very happy about it. But it's because, like you said, it's really just patterns that follow these standards now. Because if you walk into a store, an 8 back in 1950 certainly isn't the 8 that you'll find today.
And the very reason that happened is probably because of how you felt when you bought that pattern for your dress, is it made you feel bad about a number.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, brands figured out that women don't want to buy clothing that's really high up on the scale. So, as Kristen said, what was a size 8 may now be a size 0, simply because people have figured out that women are vain about what size they are.
Right. And I think what you're referring to is vanity sizing.
Vanity sizing. And it's sort of a hot topic of debate in the fashion world. I've read some arguments this week that people who say it doesn't exist, other people who say there's no way it doesn't exist when there are stores that are selling size zeros, size like 00.
Yeah.
Extra, extra small.
There's a definite trend. I mean, according to an article on MSNBC.com, a size 8 in 1950 translated to a size 4 in the 1970s, and today that same size 8 is a 00.
Which is kind of hard to believe when you consider a statistic from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, as reported in Real Simple Magazine, looked at women from 1962 to 2002, and their height had gone up 1 inch, and their weight had gone up more than 24 pounds. So we're somehow getting bigger, and our clothes are getting smaller.
Right. I think the average woman's size today is a 14.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be the 8 was considered the average size. But I guarantee you, if you try to go vintage shopping and you put on an 8, it's going to be tight.
But it's interesting you mentioned the size of 8, Kristen, because we were reading about how clothes are sized today, and manufacturers work off the assumption that 8 is sort of the midpoint, despite mm-hmm. the fact that, as you say, it's probably closer to 14.
Right, Molly. According to Tim Gunn of Project Runway fame, the process for even designing a woman's garment starts with the designer making a sketch of the idea, and then they enlist a quote-unquote fit model, who is a person who represents the company's ideal midpoint size, which is, like you said, that size 8. But this is where it might get tricky, because different designers might use a different silhouette. Some fit models might have, you know, broader shoulders or narrower hips or larger thighs, whatever it is, because each designer has an idea of how they want their garments to look on our bodies. So that's why you still get variations even among the fit size 8.
Right. And, you know, because these women, their job is to be a size 8, they may not be a size 8 like a real world woman. A real world woman is a size 8.
Right. Because you could walk into any number of stores and the size 8 could actually fit all different sizes of women.
But as you say, the designers do care how their clothes look, which is why I'm guessing, I mean, I don't want to point any fingers, but I think that the designers seem to care more about how the clothes look for the smaller sizes. And then they just kind of multiply up for the heavier sizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they try to do everything in proportion, like as the waist gets larger, then the arms get longer. But yeah,
that's really not
as
how
most
body
women
works.
Know. Yeah, that's not how our bodies grow. So now today we have this situation where sizes are just all over the place, and some governments want to do something about it.
Yeah, this is a time when we should be modeling Spain.
Yeah, Spain has really taken the lead in this women's clothing size standardization. Because if you remember, I believe it was in 2007, Spain actually banned extremely thin models from walking the catwalk in their fashion week. And the Minister of Health then took it one step further by calling for the standardization of women's clothing sizes based on these real world female measurements, because he thought that it reflected poorly on or promoted poor body image for younger consumers especially. And he was calling for this not only from mass market retailers, but also for the smaller designers as well, so that an 8 is an 8 is an 8, mm-hmm. no matter where you shop. So it'll be interesting to see how that actually plays out. And there have also been efforts in the U.S. and the U.K. as well, Molly, to kind of revamp the initial survey that we were talking about that took place in the mid-century to update those clothing sizes. Because like you said, it was mostly Caucasian women, which is not representative of the population.
Yeah. And you know what's cool about this, Kristen?
What?
They used scanners.
Scanners?
Yes. Full body scanners. Like, there's this company, they have, what's it called? The
TC2.
TC2. T2 is the Terminator sequel. So you'd walk into the scanner and all this technology bursts of white light that I don't quite understand.
Maybe tech stuff can cover this for us.
Yeah. Well, Kristen's just looking at me blankly when I start talking about white light, but white light would capture your body and would make your body into like a series of dots essentially. And then the manufacturers would know how two dots were related. Mm-hmm. And that would be the measurement, as opposed to just putting a tape measure around your waist and calling that your measurement. They would look at ratios. They would look at where things were located and which things were higher and lower on some people. And that was how they would do measurements. So the vision some of these people had was that you could get a scan, have it put on like a hard drive, and you could walk around to stores and put it into like their scanner complementary device, I guess, and say, this is my body. Find mm-hmm. clothes that fit me.
Yeah, and you could find the exact fit clothes. But that's not exactly how things have happened.
That does not sound cheap. So I'm guessing that was one factor in scanning technology not really getting off the ground.
But one thing that did come out of this, I believe it was Size USA was the name of this survey, including the white light high-tech scanners that we obviously know a lot about, was that it intentionally included more minority women. Mm-hmm. They actively sought out African-American women, Latino women, who now make up a much larger percentage of the population than they did in the 1950s, to actually get a representative look at what a woman's body in the U.S. looks like.
And, you know, they're finding that women are like snowflakes. There really are no two alike. I don't know if we'll ever get to the point where a size 8 is a size 8 is a size 8, But I think the important thing that could come out of this is that we learned that size 8 is not the midpoint. The study found that only 10% or less than 10% of mm-hmm. women met an ideal size 8. So this should not be the standard for which we base all our clothing sizes.
Right. And there was an article on this in The Atlantic by Virginia Postrel. And there was an interesting quote that she made, which said that clothing creates the illusion that bodies fit an aesthetically pleasing form, that clothes actually cover up the natural shape of our bodies. And I think that's important to keep in mind. Like you said, bodies, as kind of cheesy as it sounds, bodies are like snowflakes. There's not an actual standard size of a woman's body. With a man, it might be easier to break it down into a waist and, you know, inseam, but we just got a lot more curves to work with, Molly. Let's face it.
We do. So, you know, it's kind of an unfortunate end to the podcast because we don't have any sort of grand solution for this. You really do have to basically try on all these sizes and find one that fits.
Right. And if you feel crazy that you're walking into a store and you put on, you know, the size 8 and maybe, the fact of the matter is it might be bigger than it used to be because as, you know, Americans are growing larger, companies are trying to cater to that by downsizing their sizes. You're not crazy.
No,
you're not crazy. It's just women's clothing sizes are not standard. Going back to that initial standardizing effort that we were talking about, that started really in the early 20th century, that was thrown out completely in 1983.
Yeah, it just wasn't accurate.
Yeah. So we might see, I don't know, maybe in the next few years with the Size USA survey and all these fantastic scanners we have, we might see maybe a little more standardization. But I got to say, don't hold your breath for a while.
We can move to Spain.
We could move to Spain. I'd love to move to Spain.
They have afternoon naps.
Mm-hmm.
Siestas.
Siesta. But Molly, before we go head out and try to sneak a siesta in the How Stuff Works offices, I got to say something to men because the idea for this podcast came from a male listener who was asking about women's clothing sizes. And you know what? Take all of this to heart when you're thinking about whether or not you want to buy a lady in your life a piece of clothing. Maybe you should stick with perfume or shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Shoe sizes. Those are easy to figure out.
Yeah.
Or just take her with you.
Take her with you, maybe to a tailor.
Yeah.
So you can get so romantic. Honey, we're going to go to a tailor so your clothes fit perfectly.
To a haberdasher. Well, if you want to learn more about clothing, style, and just good old-fashioned anatomy, you can head over to howstuffworks.com. And as always, if you have a question or comment for me and Molly, please send us an email at momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And finally, if you want to read even more stuff that is on mine and Molly's minds, you should check out our new blog called How To Stuff. And, of course, you can find that at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., And I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.